Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Well, safe and sound now, back in good old 1955.
You're my
name is Lorraine.
Where are my pants?
Over there. I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Well, that is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein?
No, actually, people call me Marty.
But when you discuss that part with people and you say, I got this role, here's the kicker. I almost fall in love with my son.
I don't almost, I do. I've got the hots for my son.
I just thought it was hilarious.
Hi, I'm Dan Patrick, and this is IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick, an Amazon original, the podcast where I talk to some of Hollywood's top actors, directors, and producers about some of their most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and have even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by actress and director Leah Thompson. She's most well known for her role as Lorraine in the Back to the Future trilogy. She began her performance career studying ballet and was dancing professionally by the age of 14. However, when she was 20, world-famous dancer Mikhail Baryshnikov told her she did not have the body type to become a prima ballerina. So she quit the ballet and pursued acting. She initially performed in a number of Burger King commercials alongside her eventual Back to the Future co-star Elizabeth Chew. In 1984, the casting team for Back to the Future discovered Leah in the 1984 film The Wildlife, which she starred in alongside Eric Stoltz, who at the time had been cast as Marty McFly. However, after several weeks of filming, Stoltz was fired and replaced by Michael J. Fox. Back to the Future was directed by Robert Zemeckis. He co-wrote the film with his producing partner, Bob Gale. The film turned out to be one of the biggest box office hits of all time, earning over $381 million off a $19 million budget. The scene in question is when Marty has to travel back in time from 1985 to 1955, and he wakes up in his mother, Lorraine's, bedroom. However, 18-year-old Lorraine has no idea that Marty is her son, and she has the hots for him. What's your favorite scene in the movie?
My favorite scene probably is, for me, of course, we're talking about me. I think probably when Michael wakes up and I his underwear, I'm talking about his underwear. It's just so demented and hilarious.
Do you mind if I sit here?
No, fine. No, good, fine, good.
That's a big bruise you have there.
Lorraine, are you up there?
Oh, my God, it's my mother. Quick, put your pants back on.
You go from mom to excitable teenager. Isn't Michael's opening line, doesn't he say mom?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, you're in love. You're not even hearing anything.
No. And it's so funny in the third movie when he goes, Mom, Mom, who are you?
When you get this script, what do you think when you're first reading for this part?
Oh, I thought it was the greatest part ever. I thought it was just insane and so fun. And obviously a chance to show off as an actor, you know, and I was very young at the time. So that was super exciting.
What part of the script jumped out at you when you said it was the best that you'd ever read?
It was funny. It was interesting. It was demented. I mean, my part was that I was like in love with my son. I thought that was so funny. My sense of humor has always been a little bit off. Even though I looked like so, I played that kind of sweet and innocent. I was a modern dancer. My sensibility was a little bit more kind of artistic, I think, than you would think at the time. From my image as a Midwestern, you know, ingenue. So I really thought that it was just the best part and the most kooky story.
No hesitancy playing somebody who's going to maybe fall in love with their own son?
Never, not one bit. It was hilarious.
When you discuss that part with people and you say, I got this role and here's the kicker. I almost fall in love with my son.
I don't almost, I do.
This is all wrong. I don't know what it is. But when I kiss you, it's like I'm kissing my brother. I guess it doesn't make any sense, does it?
Believe me, it makes perfect sense.
I've got the hots for my son. I just thought it was hilarious. I had no problem with it.
How old were you when you started shooting this? This was, what, 85?
I was 24, 23 or 24.
And you had some acting credits before this.
Right.
But were you prepared for, like, this is a big role, and it turned out to be obviously a big movie, but how do you prepare for something like that at that age?
I worked really hard on it. I did a lot of reading. I went and bought all these magazines from the 50s to try to get steeped in the propaganda of the time. And there was some crazy propaganda, you know, because if you remember, they had to get women out to work in the 40s because all the men were overseas. And then they had to get them back in the house so that the men could get their jobs back. So there was this crazy, weird propaganda. I know people look back on it and they're like, this was such a great time. No, it was kind of really creepy. It was kind of all about women getting women back in the kitchen. So the propaganda in the magazines was insane. And I listened to a lot of music from the 50s. And my favorite song that I played almost every day to get into character was Mr. Sandman, which was like a ridiculous song. You remember that? Like, boom, 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 boom. Mr. Sandman. Yes. I'm so alone. Boom, 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 boom. You know, it was goofy. So that would get me right into character. It does kind of ridiculous, weird kitten sexuality. So I did all that work. And I had all the coins from the 50s and lipstick and, you know, so I'd get the right color of lipstick. And I was super aware of all the things that could create a really honest character in this kind of broad comedy.
Why do you think they picked 1955?
Well, I mean, I just think you had to go backwards from 1985 to find the parents, you know, what age they would be when they were 17. Also, you know, it was a really kitschy, fun time. One thing that's interesting about the way the movie endures is that at the time it was nostalgic for the 50s and now it's nostalgic for the 80s and the 50s. So it just ended up being this perfect movie for parents and grandparents to show their children.
And Back to the Future is really good at looking at the 50s ideals with that satirical lens.
Yeah.
It just did a wonderful job in just all the things, you know, Pepsi free, you're going to have to pay for it. You know, the movie house where it's Ronald Reagan movies and it was a porno movie in the 80s. There were just so many little, like, you can watch it over and over and still find something new. It feels like each time you do.
It also was a really special time. I know, being a star of the 80s, because it was the first time you could buy a movie, own it, hold it in your hand. You know, it was the very beginning of that. And it was a very special time that was unique.
And Robert Zemeckis is famous for everything being precise. As an actor, I'm guessing that's a great thing to have somebody who is so precise.
Well, that's a beautiful observation. That's a great thing to say, because that's something I always appreciate about him. And as I've become a director in the last 15 years, I emulate his style because he was precise, not just with his comedy and his shots, but with the story, you know. And I think it's so rare that you see a movie where every single shot he told you in the beginning, pay attention to these details, and they paid off. I set up a joke in the beginning of the movie when I go, you know, here's the cake and Uncle Jailbird, you know, Uncle Joey didn't make parole again. And then like 40 minutes later, Michael Fox leans down and the playpen with the baby and he goes, get used to those bars, kid. And the audience erupts in laughter. Now that's a setup 40 minutes ago. You know what I mean? There isn't that kind of precision filmmaking anymore.
What do you think Back to the Future is all about?
You know, everyone's got a different answer. But for me, I think one of the reasons it endures, and just like any kind of great musical, it has to have some kind of underlying message. And I believe the message of the movie is when George McFly punches Biff and changes his future and his children's future and everything, because, and when he kisses me, for me, it's about if you have the courage to stand up for what you believe in one moment of your life, you can change everything.
Are you deaf, McFly? Close the door and beat it.
No, Biff. You leave her alone.
All right, McFly. You're asking for it. And now you're gonna get it.
Are you okay?
And I feel like that's just an incredible message for all of us, because it's hard, you know? It's hard to have the courage of your convictions and to realize that small acts of valor, compassion, kindness can change your whole future. And for me, that's the message.
Yeah, I looked at it. It's rewriting your past, the American dream, family ties in there as well. I even get like there's this sense of It's a Wonderful Life as well. I don't know if I'm reaching too far with that, but those are some of the things that come to mind whenever I watch that movie.
Well, that's the story of It's a Wonderful Life too. Like, it's the same thing. Like, all your little, the sum total of the good decisions you make in your life, the little ones add up to a better life. I agree. I think that's really a deep message. And it's so satisfying in the movie that, in the way he shot it, that you know that that's part of it. You know, when those two moments, the way Bob Zemeckis constructed them, and the music, and the way he slowed time down, you know, you see that. And I feel like This Is Us has got some of the same things where you can go back in time and see how things changed your life. But in the end, I think there's a very deep message to it.
When did you know it was a hit?
Don't know. I mean, I do remember going to the Cinerama Dome after it had been out for like a month and a half, and it was completely sold out. I stood in the back with my boyfriend for the whole movie and watched the audience. Everyone was just with every moment of it. And I thought, gosh, this is something. You know, when you're acting and you feel like everyone is at the top of their game, all the actors were so good, every single little part was so good and spot on, you know. And when I watch it now, more as a director, I so appreciate how committed all of the principals were to different styles of comedy, but very big styles. Like, everyone was doing something different, but they all went together in this incredible way. And we were not holding back. Like, those are some big-ass performances.
And where's my reports?
Well, I haven't finished those up yet, but, you know, I figured since they weren't due till...
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Oh. Think, McFly. Right. Think. I gotta have time to get them retyped. Yeah. Do you realize what would happen if I handed my reports in your handwriting? I'll get fired. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you? Would you? Oh,
of course not, Biff. Now, I wouldn't want that to happen. Now, look, I'll finish those reports on up tonight, and I'll run them on over first thing tomorrow, all right?
Hey, not too early. I sleep in Saturday. McFly, your shoes aren't tied.
I think Crispin Glover is so underrated in this movie. And I don't know if somebody's underrating him. I always felt like he gets sort of lost in the shuffle with all of this because there were so many great performances. But his comedy, the physical comedy that he had, I thought it was great.
I totally agree with you on that. He was a genius. Every single move he does in that movie is incredible. He was doing a really specific kind of commedia dell'arte with his movements. They were like kind of like almost puppet kind of movements, the way he did things. And he, you know, he was young. He was like 20 or something like that. But he worked really hard on that performance, and he was really committed. And he was a genius.
What was your reaction when they replaced Eric Stoltz with Michael J. Fox?
That was really hard for me because I was friends with him. I had already done The Wildlife with him. So he was a very good friend of mine. So it was very hard and upsetting. But, you know, ultimately, it was such a different film with him. He was a much more kind of serious actor, or at least that was his approach to the film. They needed Michael Fox, who was, like I said, everyone was doing a different kind of comedy. Michael was, you know, doing the Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, you know, the physical comedy precision that he brought to it. You know, the way he would slide across a car and the way he would kick his skateboard, you know, he practiced all of that physical comedy. And it was ultimately just the perfect tone for the movie.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, I didn't see any takes with Eric, but you can't imagine Michael not being in that role when you see how, you know, the finished product there.
He was great. Yeah.
When do you know that, oh my gosh, this is going to be a different movie and he is the perfect person for this?
It was a different time. You know, I'm sure you're old enough to remember when TV stars didn't get to be movie stars, and he was a TV star. So it was weird. And I remember being snotty about that in my mind. And then I was like, we shared a dressing room, like they call it a two banger. And so it's like a trailer, but two things. And I remember like one of the first days we were shooting, I tried to open my door and it had been like wrapped in crepe paper by all the local girls. So we're just like screaming outside for Michael. And I was like, oh, I get it. He's Elvis, you know. Oh, I get this. No one ever did that for me.
What was makeup like?
The makeup was hard. Yeah. The old age makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a real process. It ends up feeling really tight and weird. And what's really hard is that you can't move, because if you break it, if you break where the glue is holding, it just, there's no way to repair it. So I remember what was really difficult is that first scene when when I have the vodka and the cake. That was the funniest scene we ever shot for us, because Crispin was so funny. You remember when he's watching Jackie Gleason?
And he's just laughing by himself?
Yeah, he's just doing that with that weird snake thing that he decided to do, which was hilarious. And I remember we were all a little slap happy because it was a really long day. And I just couldn't laugh because I would break my makeup.
Your father kissed me for the very first time on that dance floor. And it was then that I realized that I was going to spend the rest of my life with him.
Michael's shooting Family Ties back then. And then you guys had to shoot at night?
Yes, we did. That's probably also why we retired. We had to shoot at night for a long time. That was hard. It was a long time ago. I don't remember much about it, but I do remember that day.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
What did you save from the movie?
I only saved the dress and the shoes from the prom and my jewelry. My whole outfit from the prom I saved. And I did save from Back to the Future 2. I saved my breasts. my big breasts that they put on, which really weren't that big, but everybody made a big deal about it.
Mom? Mom, that can't be you.
Oh, yes, it's me, Marty. Are you all right?
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
Well, how do you display your fake breasts?
Well, I didn't. They were in a bag, a big bag in my garage. And then they eventually just smelled so bad, I threw them away. But I didn't want them falling into the wrong hands because inside was my real boobs. You know, you could see it was a mold of my real boobs. So I didn't save much.
Did you know there were going to be sequels when you're shooting the original?
No, we didn't sign for sequels. They didn't really think about it that way.
What do people say to you if they see you on the street, like, you know, with this movie in mind?
Mostly just how much they love the movie and how much it means to them, which is just so precious and, such a blessing and a miracle, really, to be part of people's lives and make them happy. And I've really realized that during the quarantine and this difficult time that we're going through, that honestly, what we do is important. And, you know, it was important for me to be able to sit and watch something that got my mind off of my life and that expanded my universe and made me more empathetic and made me laugh. You know, we don't think about our job that way, you know, even for you, you know, doing podcasts and getting people so they don't feel alone. And you know, what we do is important.
And I always come away with, we never think of our parents as kids.
Yeah.
And this movie reminds us that our parents were knuckleheads just like us.
Yeah, which is, I think, maybe the second big thing you get from this movie is, you know, that continuity of humanity. And we're all just doing our best, you know? We're all just trying to get through the day and doing our best. And our parents were kids, too.
What was it like doing the year of Spectacular Men with the whole family, with your daughters in it?
It was so special. My daughters and I did a movie together. My daughter Madeline wrote a movie right when she got out of college about just how hard it is to be a millennial right now, which it really is, how to navigate this new world where everything is so hard for them. So she wrote a movie, and then my other daughter Zoe and I produced it, and I directed it, and Maddie did the score, and she wrote the songs. There's a new level of understanding when you get to both do what you love to do together.
Did they look at you as mom or did they look at you as the director?
It was interesting. You work through a lot of different things that with, you know, going through that. But I think both. I don't think it's possible to like separate yourself from your mother, especially daughters. I don't know. Do you have a daughter?
I got three.
You know how complicated the relationship with their mother is, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and the best advice I ever got was just listen. And so I just sit and listen. My daughters are 22 through 26, and I have a son who's older. He's 28. And all I do is listen.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you everything.
Mm.
Girls will tell you everything.
Mm.
That's my fatherly advice I always give to guys when they have girls. They're like, oh, what do I do? What happens when boys come by? I go, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down.
Mm-hmm.
It'll all work out, but always establish you can be a sounding board for them without being, let me lecture you.
And with that beautiful voice, you don't use that voice. You just listen. I love it. I love it. Well, the thing about my children that's hilarious to me is they'll text me like, how are you doing? And I'll be like, I'm fine. They'll text back, why are you yelling at me?
But are you tough with them?
Yeah, about certain things. I definitely was.
What do your girls say about you when they see you as playing a teenager?
I was doing Caroline in the City when they were young. And every week I was kissing somebody else. And I didn't... I didn't really realize it, but they would watch and they'd be crying. They'd start to cry. Mom's kissing someone. So I think they really have deep problems. I'd be like, let's watch my show. There's 20 million people watching it. Somebody should watch it in my house. And they'd end up in tears.
I've been in, I think, 18 Sandler movies, cameos. And in one of them, I have to kiss a woman and it's not in the script. And one of my daughters is working on the set as just a gopher. And Sandler changes the script as we're rehearsing. He says, Danny, I want you to kiss her. And my daughter is, this is on a baseball field, and I'm in the bleachers, and she's down on the field, and she looks up, and you could see where she is heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to go through the scene a couple times. I have to kiss the woman, and I get done with the scene, and I walk, like, I have the walk of shame. So I go down on the baseball field, and my daughter goes, are you going to tell Mom? And I said, honey, it's in the movie. Yes, I'm gonna tell her. I called my wife. I said, I had to kiss a woman in my scene. Just want to let you know. So, you know, in case somebody else tells you, like my daughter. And then she goes, okay. So my daughter didn't believe me. She goes, did you tell Mom? I go, yes, you did not. I go, yes. This is called acting, believe it or not. I might not be an actor, but this is called acting.
Yeah. So you know what I had to deal with.
Oh, you had to deal with it far more than I did.
Although Madeline did write that I had to kiss a girl in the movie that she wrote that I was in. I guess that was okay.
You know what? Your daughters must have your sense of humor. Let's put it that way.
When they did this new release of Back to the Future, this, I don't know, 5H, 7D, whatever this is, there's some bonus footage of me and C. Thomas Howell doing an audition. And they were like, they watched it and they were like, Mom, you didn't even learn the lines. And I was like, because they saw me looking down at the paper. They're like, because whenever I audition with them, I'm like, you have to learn all the lines. Never look at your paper. They're like, Mom, you're looking at your lines.
Thank you for your time. And I always appreciate when people take a stroll down memory lane, and hopefully it's enjoyable for you as well. But you know, there's so much to be proud of that and still proud of that. But thank you for your time, Leah.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
New episodes of IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick are available exclusively on Amazon Music. Please make sure to follow us in the Amazon Music app to get every episode. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick was created, hosted, and produced by me, Dan Patrick. It's also produced by Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody, and executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood for Workhouse Media. IMDb's That Scene with Dan Patrick is a production of Dan Patrick Productions and IMDb in association with Workhouse Media.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.